You're listening to the John C. Scott Political Forum. This podcast is a Bustos Media production on The Voice. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
This portion of the John C. Scott Show originates from the Perfection Auto Works Studios, and welcome to part two of our Saturday soiree. Matt Klink is with us, a GOP consultant, one of the most respected GOP strategists in all of America. We talked to him from his home office in Los Angeles. Matt, welcome to the show. I'm so glad you could join us. Thank you.
Oh, thanks for having me, John. How are you on this fine Saturday?
I'm fine, and I always try to reduce things down to a very elementary level so that I can understand them. And I think I understand the term whistleblower, but this is just out of hand. What the hell are we doing here, and what is a whistleblower? What do you do if you have the information that you're whistleblowing on? Who do you give it to, and what do they do with it? And this is nuts. This is nuts. Tell me more about this.
So, John, I know it's going to shock you when I say this, but it's all about politics. And so for what appears to have happened is that Trump allegedly, in conversations with the president of the Ukraine, urged them to investigate Joe Biden's son for some consulting work that he had done with a very well-to-do Ukrainian natural gas firm. Apparently, Joe Biden said that if an investigator of Ukraine was not removed from the case, that there would be no money that would be sent to the Ukraine. Now, the problem is that an obvious Trump hater in government blew the whistle for an apparently inappropriate or allegedly independent or inappropriate, contact. But because it is the Intelligence Committee, it doesn't flow straight to the committees of Congress. What it has to do is it has to go to the Director of National Intelligence, who has received the apparent whistleblower complaint, and he hasn't done anything with it. So I think that the bottom line here is that Trump probably should have used a little bit more discretion, and similar to it also diverts attention from a very long New York Times article about Joe Biden's son, who made many millions of dollars on a very, very controversial consulting contract in the Ukraine. I think the bottom line is it highlights the cozy relationship that both parties have in using the levers of power to make a lot of money.
Well, I think the Trump-Ukraine scandal could backfire on Biden, couldn't it? I mean, there's a problem here for him.
Oh, absolutely. I think that there absolutely is. And I think that that's why the Biden people, his original statement was very milquetoast, and you saw him come out with a much more forceful statement today. All that being said, John, it doesn't look good for either the Republicans or the Democrats to have this stuff happen. Again, it's more of just when people say a pox on both your houses, it's stuff like this that frustrates the majority of Americans who are not overtly Republican or Democrat. They just want the government to get off their back and make a good economy so they can make a living.
We're talking with Matt Klink, GOP consultant out of Los Angeles. It seems to me that this Foreign Affairs Department of the government is probably less able to deal with foreign affairs than it's ever been. Is there anybody there that's been there for longer than a day? Did people just walk in and then they're gone? And I mean, how we don't all have all hands on deck unless there's just two hands. I mean, there's just not a lot of hands to get on deck here. But we maybe need these people somewhere along the way if we go to war.
We've had a pretty steady hand at the tiller with Mike Pompeo as Secretary of State, aside from the blip that was Rex Tillerson at the start of the administration. He's really consolidated power, and I think that he is a steady hand. Let's not forget, he was West Point grad, Harvard Law grad, served in the United States Army. He knows what he's doing. And you know what? I think the one saving grace about Donald Trump, for all of his saber-rattling, he really did make a commitment during the 2016 campaign that he wanted to avoid foolish wars. And he has largely done that. I mean, he he showed discretion when he could have launched an attack against Iran earlier. Although I will tell you that from my contacts over in the Middle East, they are saying that the sanctions that Trump just initiated against the Iranian central bank, that was the big kahuna from a sanction standpoint. Those are the ones that are really going to bite. And I think you'll probably see Iran react very negatively to that, because these are the sanctions that everybody wanted Donald Trump to ultimately initiate. And it really, really hurt. These are going to really bite the Iranians hard.
As we take a look at the whole situation, I'm not sure, if anybody's going to sit down with anybody or shoot somebody. I mean, this is really a tricky situation. Do we have the people on board here that can keep us out of this? Or are we just one accident away from blowing up the whole world?
No, I would like to believe, and I have a fairly steady confidence in that the men and women who lead the United States military are more than adequately prepared. I think that the Commander-in-Chief, Donald Trump, aside from his bellicose rhetoric, John, I think that he does not want to get American troops into another war, especially one in the Middle East. And we're a country of 300 million people. We have enough people to get the job done. We just don't have a full complement of staff, and that has as much to do with people leaving the Trump administration as it does with the slow pace of confirmations in Washington, D.C. But no, I am not worried about that. I'm not concerned about that. In fact, I think that on many fronts, the United States is stronger than it was, but the world is an evolving place. I mean, the Middle East has been a mess. It was a mess for Barack Obama. It was a mess for Bush. It was a mess for Clinton. And it's a mess under Trump. So it is what it is, and he's dealing with it. And he hasn't, put it this way, he hasn't started any new wars, and he is trying to de-escalate in Afghanistan.
We're talking with Matt Klein, GOP strategist in Los Angeles. Israel's former military chief, Benny Gantz, has declared victory in Israel's elections and rebuffed Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's call for power sharing. And that country, of course, is bracing for weeks of political uncertainty, geopolitical tensions rising in the Middle East. This instability in Israel is a problem, not only for Israel, but for the entire Middle East. This is amazing what's happened here. Did it surprise you, Netanyahu's fall? That was eventually going to happen one way or another, wasn't it?
Well, I mean, he's been the longest-serving Israeli prime minister in history. He's been an excellent prime minister, but he's also been a controversial prime minister. The question remains as to whether, by the way, Benny Gantz, who is a more centrist Israeli politician, former head of the Israeli military, he's an ally of America, too. So it's not like we have an anti-American versus a pro-American. They will still be a very cherished and reliable ally for us in the Middle East. The question is whether Mr. Gantz, because of Israeli coalition politics, can form a government. Benjamin Netanyahu, about 3 months ago, was elected, and he couldn't form a government because the ultra-conservative Jewish faction that left his government refused to join him. What the ultra-conservative Jews are calling for, though, John, is they want a coalition government of both Bibi Netanyahu and Benny Gantz to unite and rule the country together, and they would alternate being prime minister. Benny Gantz has said no, that he won't do that. So, I mean, again, it highlights that the general political uncertainty is not unique to the United States. We're seeing it in Israel. We're certainly seeing it in a number of countries in Europe. Look at the United Kingdom right now with Boris Johnson and Brexit. We're seeing it in Germany with Merkel, whose era of power is winding down, and the rise of the far right in German politics. So I think we're just in for a period of time of pretty topsy-turvy government across a number of countries in the world.
I'm curious about whether you believe that Iran will ever sit down with Trump. I don't see that happening in the near future, but maybe down the road somewhat. And how do you defuse this completely? It's still... It's still burning. The fuse is still burning. And there's a bomb at the end of it. So what do we do?
There literally is a bomb at the end of it. And I think that, you know, President Obama cut what many believe was a bad deal with Iran. And there are equally as many people who believe it was a good deal. And I think you heard members of the United States Senate say, no more deals with Iran that are not a treaty, which, as you know, John, President Obama never submitted the Iran deal to a vote because he didn't have the votes, not only from Republicans, but also from Democrats like Chuck Schumer in New York and Bob Menendez in New Jersey. Iran has said they will not sit down with President Trump until he removes all sanctions and reinstitutes the Iran treaty, which is basically saying we're not going to sit down and talk to you. However, if a shooting war starts in the Middle East and the Saudis and the Iranians actually trade fire rather than the Iranians launching drones into Saudi Arabia, Saudi Arabia has the military capacity backed with U.S. weapons to do some serious damage in Iran, and that ultimately could drive the Iranians back to the table. But right now, the Iranians are the greatest force of instability in the entire world, with their terrorist operations in Iraq and Syria and in Lebanon. They are really a menace in the Middle East, and we need a united front to take care of them.
By the way, Saudi Arabia spent billions to protect the kingdom, and they still couldn't do it. The Iranian drone and missile attacks exposing what clearly are gaps even in America's most advanced weaponry, which have failed to fill those gaps. So, I mean, if you've got billions to protect your oil and you can't protect it, that's a problem along the way.
Yeah, and I don't know if they had, like, for example, the Israelis have Iron Dome, which is their missile defense system. I do know that Trump has just sent a missile defense battery and some troops to the to Saudi Arabia in hopes of stopping future attacks like this. But, you know, again, Saudi Arabia they're in a pretty hostile zone. They're in a proxy war in Yemen with the Houthis, which are sponsored by the Iranians. It's a mess, and the U.S. does not want to get caught up in another war in that part of the world.
As you take a look at the Democratic debates, and they continue to unfold still with a crowded stage and such, but again, we still have a final four. I guess it would be Biden and Warren and perhaps two more to fill in there. Who would be your final four at the moment? And what are we going to do with all these people if we just keep throwing them on stage 10 after 10 after 10? And eventually we've had people drop out. I think we're going to cull the field here very soon. But what do you think of the number at the moment that we have to pay attention to?
Well, so I think that you're starting to see the inevitable reality of so many candidates that they just don't have what it takes to be president. So my final four is Joe Biden, Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, and then I think it's a toss-up between Kamala Harris, who is dropping, and Pete Buttigieg, who is, you know, who is roughly at the same place. There really is a top three, and there's a clear separation between those three. You know, Karen Klobuchar wants to stay in for as long as possible as a centrist Dem from the middle of the country, from Minnesota. But I think, like, the Julian Castros, the Beto O'Rourke's, the Cory Booker's, the Carol Williamson, they will be out soon. And anyone who does hang around by Iowa, I mean, Kamala Harris has said she's flooding Iowa in hopes of finishing third. So I think that's pretty much a reality. We'll be down to about five candidates after Iowa and New Hampshire.
Well, does that tell us something about, I guess, what the field's going to look like in 2020? Who's the most formidable candidate for Republicans? Who do they fear the most, do you think? Well, who do you fear the most, for that matter?
You know what? I think that even though her politics are completely kooky and she has not answered how you pay for all this stuff with any specificity, I think Elizabeth Warren is the most formidable candidate at this point. I think primarily because she's a happy warrior. She is an optimist. She talks about what we can do. She's got a plan for everything. She has answers to everything except how you'll pay for stuff. And I just think that she is a very, very strong candidate. And I still think that while Biden is viewed as the safe choice, Joe Biden is Joe Biden. He constantly puts his foot in his mouth. And now he's lucky in that he is by far and away the most popular candidate, but he's one big gap away from making this thing really, really interesting. I think Bernie's looking tired. So I would say in order, it would be Elizabeth Warren, Joe Biden, and then Bernie Sanders.
I was going to say, Matt, these crowds for Warren are unbelievable. I mean, they're not made up. I mean, you can count them one way or another with any formula you want, and they're impressive. They really are.
Oh, they are. She's drawing legitimate Donald Trump-like numbers to rallies, and in part because her message is resonating. Now, the question is whether that translates to the silent majority. Most of whom really don't care about politics, much less politics in mid-September or late September, the year before an election. But she has captured an energy that every other Democratic candidate wishes that they have right now.
Matt Klink, it's great to talk with you. I'm so glad you give us part of your weekend, and I apologize for interrupting the 2 days, but I'm so glad you could talk with us because I always learn from you, and it's always great talking with you. Thank you so very much.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I'm going back to football now, John. Have a great
good
weekend.
Good for you. We'll be back in a moment. Matt Klink is a GOP consultant, GOP strategist, one of the most respected in all of America, and from his offices in Los Angeles. And now back to football for Matt Klink. We'll be back with more of the John C. Scott Show, talking with the folks from United Way, and Ed Ackerley, who's an independent candidate for mayor. Tucson Map and Flag announces a concierge service. Tucson Map and Flag store that Tucsonans grew to love is now closed. Tucson Map and Flag is open now during business hours on your phone. Call Charles Smith, the American flag expert, at 887-4234. Order your American flag at a great price. Almost any size is available. Travel maps to most of the world available as well. And now the concierge service of Tucson Map and Flag is just a phone call away. Call Charles Smith at 887-4234 and place your order. Tucson Map and Flag, sharing your pride in America with the display of America's most cherished symbol. Call 887-4234. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the John C. Scott Political Forum. This portion of the John C. Scott Show originates from the Perfection Auto Works Studios. Let's talk now with Melissa Oriara, and she's a director of marketing and consulting for United Way of Arizona. Melissa, welcome to the show. How do you pronounce your last name?
Hi there. Yeah, it's Dioria.
Dioria. Got it. I won't mess it up again. I promise you.
You know, well, thanks very much for having me.
Well, you know, I don't want to be a United Way historian, but it seemed to me long ago, and I'm not sure what year United Way was founded, a bunch of civic leaders were trying to solve a problem. There were so many people with their hand out trying to originate dollars for all kinds of wonderful good works, and they just couldn't do it because there were so many competing efforts. So somebody said, well, let's put this all together and take some very prime and important steps to solving some of the most critical social issues within our community with a group of people and nonprofits that can benefit from one effort. Do I misrepresent this, or isn't that something?
No, you have it exactly right. And actually, we our United Way here in Tucson, it started, and it was called the Community Chest, and that was exactly the
yes,
purpose
right.
for everybody to give to one place, so we can really have a concentrated, united effort to really address the problems of our great city of Tucson. And coming up in just a couple years, in 2022, we'll be celebrating our 100th anniversary in Tucson and Southern Arizona.
Wow. Long time. Let me ask you about how it has grown. I don't know what the first year's offerings were of people coming together with it, but it's been an enormous successful evolution of more dollars almost every year for such wonderful causes. Talk about the diversity of where the dollars go and how many dollars are absolutely generated by the United Way effort each year, please, Melissa.
Yeah, certainly. So the needs of Tucson have evolved over the years. So each year, actually, our United Way, along with a committee, really evaluates to make sure that we're focusing on the right impact areas for Tucson. Where are the needs the greatest? So our focus is on education, financial stability, and healthy communities. So together with our partners and the business community and other nonprofits, we really focus on what are the most impactful ways for us to give back to the community. And through grants and fundraising, we put several million dollars back into our community each year.
And how are those particular organizations chosen to be a part of the United Way effort, Melissa?
Well, we actually do additionally have a committee that that chooses each of those organizations. Several of them we've been partners with for 30 plus years, so it's a history. But also we make sure that we have results and data to prove that we're working with the organizations that are results focused.
It seems to me, too, that the United Way offers people a real assurance, almost a guarantee that when they give a dollar or $100 or $1,000 or how many tens of thousands of dollars, that that money is going to go to a worthwhile cause, and there's going to be an oversight of those dollars and how they are spent, not only from the administration of United Way, but also from the organizations that they serve. That's important. I think people want to feel confident that their money's going to go to help somebody.
Absolutely. I mean, we take our stewardship, that is of the utmost importance to us. And each year we calculate how much. So if you donate a dollar to United Way of Tucson, we calculate how much of an impact that puts back into the community. And so right now our impact is a little over $5 for every dollar donated to your United Way.
All right, let's talk about how people can give almost on a monthly basis or an annual basis, and you can have money deducted, I guess, from your paycheck. There's all kinds of ways that I've watched United Way raise money for all these worthwhile causes, and some have been very innovative and very effective. Talk about those ways that people can be more convenient with the way they are able to give to help people.
Yeah, if you work for one of the larger companies in town, it's possible you'll have a workplace campaign with United Way where you're able to give a portion of your paycheck every month, every other month, to the impact area of your choice. So you can choose, education, something you're really passionate about. So you want to focus your donation there. You can also give to United Way online at unitedwaytucson.org. We also have a lot of planned giving and endowment programs that folks can take advantage of. And then on top of that, we offer a lot of opportunities to volunteer as an additional way to give back to United Way and to your community.
Let's talk about the volunteer opportunities that people have. Tell me how people can be introduced to them and how they can take part in those volunteer efforts, please.
Sure. Yeah, so part of United Way, we have a volunteer center. So that is a separate a website that offers volunteer opportunities all over Tucson at several different organizations. So that's something we offer year-round. However, an additional opportunity that's coming up in October, on October 25th and 26th, are our Days of Caring. And that's an event where we have reached out to the community, to nonprofits, to schools, to the city, to the county, to neighborhoods, and asked them, what projects do you need volunteers for? And now we're in the phase where we're trying to match those 145 projects with a little over 4,000 volunteers by October 24th or by October 25th and 26th.
Wow.
So it's such a great event, and we're really excited that we're in the planning phases and gearing up for it.
So you can actually find something for 4,000 people to do? Really?
Well, it's like 145 different projects. So, and actually this year is a special year. It's our 20th anniversary of Days of Caring. But to give you an example, last year we had about 120 volunteer projects, and we had over 3,200 volunteers meet all of those projects so we could complete them in those 2 days.
You know, and people that give to United Way can be selective. We just kind of touched on that a moment ago, that you can actually pick a particular area that you would be most concerned with and where you'd want your dollars to go. How do you do that? You just pick and choose, right?
Yeah, exactly. So, as I mentioned, we have those impact areas. They're large categories, we know, education, financial stability, the healthy communities. But with education, there's so many things within that. Do you care about third grade reading scores? Do you care about high school students graduating in 4 years. So there's all these little subcategories within each impact area. And so if you have a workplace campaign, we have materials that lay that out for you so you can make an educated choice. And online, we have those choices as well.
Well, I tell you, I've watched United Way throughout all these years go through. Really, has it been 100 years? I've only been around half of those 100, but I'm telling you, it's grown every single year. And really, it is, I think, because a great many people have just given of their time and effort to be part of the management effort of United Way and volunteer their skills and their interest in such a way that, you know, it's always been successful because you've always had successful people supporting it and managing it. And that makes it a real difference, I think.
Absolutely. And we know that, you know, you're only as good as the entity that you bring to the table. We know that we're stronger when we are connected with the business community, connected to the nonprofit community. That way we're all working toward the same goal. I mean, that is exactly the mission of United Way. So we take that very seriously and implement it in everything we do.
The United Way efforts all over the country. How are you affiliated with any national effort of United Way?
You know, each United Way chapter is really its own entity. It's more about sort of the name and the model. But every choice we make, everything we do, every dollar raised is all of those decisions and all of those funds stay here, right here in Tucson, in Southern Arizona.
So they don't go anywhere else but home here.
Exactly, yeah.
All right. So what do you suggest people do to get involved in this year's United Way effort? Give me some options for all kinds of folks who would like to help.
Well, if you're new to United Way, we certainly suggest you go to the website, unitedwaytucson.org, to learn a little bit more about the organization. But a great first step to get involved is to participate in the 20th annual Days of Caring on October 25th and 26th. And you can head to that same website, unitedwaytucson.org, and you'll find the Days of Caring page, which is going to take you to those 145 projects so you can take a look with your family and find a project that's perfect for you, or you can call some friends and get a team to help clean up a park. There's a variety of different projects for every skill set, every age, if you want to do it as an individual or as a group. But that's a great way to get engaged and to learn about United Way. And then once you see the work that we do, you know, we really believe you'll become a lifelong supporter.
And a volunteer too, because you want hours of people of their lives that really can make a huge difference in the lives of a great many other people. That's really important.
Exactly. And, you know, you get out what you put in, and the more you invest in your community, the more you get out of it.
So go online is the first thing you do. That's the first step, right?
Yeah, we would recommend that, unitedwaytucson.org.
We're going to have you back to talk about the Days of Sharing and also this year's effort, and I'm so pleased that you'd be able to join us today. Thank you very much, and keep reminding us of what you do so that we can help you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Melissa DeAuria of United Way. She is the Marketing Committee Chair of United Way. Ed Ackerley is going to be with us. He's coming up next on the John C. Scott Show. Ed Ackerley is an independent candidate for mayor. Tucson Map and Flag announces concierge service. Tucson Map and Flag store that Tucsonans grew to love is now closed, but Tucson Map Floor is open during business hours on your phone. Tucson Map and Flags on your phone right now. Call Cheryl Smith at American Flag. Just call 887-4234. Order your American-made flag at a very great price. Almost any size is available. Travel maps to most places in the world available as well. Now the concierge service of Tucson Map and Flag, just a phone call away. Call Charles Smith at 887-4234. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the John C. Scott Political Forum on this Saturday afternoon. With us is Ed Ackerley, independent candidate for mayor. I've always said, here is an individual that did his homework. Here's an individual that went out to find out what this city's all about and how it runs and how he could make it run better with his skills as a longtime ad agency executive and owner of one of the most successful ad agencies in America. And you did all that. You did all the homework.
Yep.
What surprised you about that educational experience of learning what the city's real mechanisms are and how it works?
One surprising thing that I thought was just really eye-opening was that not many of the other candidates have ever come through and asked the questions that I was asking, which I thought was unique and interesting. If you're applying for a job of that type, you would think that everyone would want to come by and talk to the directors and find out what's going on and be physically present. And so that was a unique experience for me to hear that I was the first person through there in many cases that had had that conversation.
You know, this sanctuary vote is coming up. Obviously, a lot of people are opposed to the sanctuary decision that voters are going to make. You are as well. Mm-hmm. How's that going to affect your race, do you think?
Proposition
205.
Do think that 205 is going to bring voters to their kitchen tables to contemplate the future of Tucson. And one of the things that they'll be doing is deciding whether or not we want to be labeled a sanctuary city, and whether or not Prop 205 actually makes the city safer, or if it does what it says it purports to do. And it is the contention of many that the proposition itself is flawed. It's flawed with its language and flawed with the specifics that it sets out in the initiative to try and help people and underserved and disadvantaged and perhaps undocumented. And it actually, in some cases, does the reverse, because it puts law enforcement at a disadvantage, and then it puts some money on the line from the state and perhaps even the feds. So it's a bad idea for Tucson in the short term, but I think even more importantly, it's a bad idea in the long term.
You know, one of the things I think your campaign has taught us all, and you and I have been having this conversation for about 6 months, or maybe longer. I think I went back to like February or something.
Correct.
When we started talking with you about this. We know that our police department is badly undermanned. We know that we're down maybe a complement of 500, perhaps, police officers that we could
Correct.
Use. We should have 9,000. We have 8,500.
Yeah.
And what are you going to do about that? Because it's one thing to say, we've got to have more cops. It's another to get them. How are you going to pay for it? Where are they going to come from? And how long is it going to take to get these police officers back on the street?
I had an interesting conversation with former Mayor Bob Walkup not too long ago. And when he was mayor, I asked him, how many police officers did you have? And he, you know, his number was a little over 1,100, and we're at 753 commissioned officers. Last number I heard, 753. It might have been 763. There was some discrepancy in that. When you think about that, that's about 400 officers down, and that's a significant number, and that affects a lot of things. It affects the call volume. It affects the time that it takes a police officer to show up at an event, and it obviously affects the number of police officers that could be on the street at any one given time. And just this past week, there was an incident in the Speedway Alvernon area where there were about 20 police cars blocking a variety of different entries and exit points into a neighborhood. And when that happens and there's, you know, that many police officers in one area, what does that mean about the other areas of our city, that they go underserved and that they don't have a response time that is adequate? So we just don't have enough officers on the street. And how do we pay for that? Well, first off, 60% of the budget from the city of Tucson goes to public safety. The majority of it goes to police and fire. Over half of what we raise goes back into the personnel and to the equipment and the resources that we need for public service. We can do a better job with the resources that we have, and then we can find ways to augment that by reprioritizing the other expenditures that we have in the budget. Because public safety is the first and foremost and most important thing that we do as a city council, and we've just got to reprioritize that. And we, you know, the last 12 years have been questionable in that regard.
Well, as you take a look at the city budget and all of that money that goes to public safety, you have to realize that it's not endless. I mean, you know, there's a bottom to it. Right. And you eventually have to find the money someplace else, don't you?
You do, and I'm a big fan of dedicated funds, that funds that go into a pool that are used specifically for a specific purpose. And you know, the bonds need to be reauthorized so that we can continue to provide equipment and continue to provide the resources. But you know, and then there was a problem with the pension plans in the state, and that has been rectified, hopefully in the short term, if not the long term. It's really a priority system, though. It's what is the priority of the city of Tucson? What are we trying to do as a community? And what do we want to be 10 or 15 years from now? And if safety, public safety, is a priority, then we need to put the resources from the budget into that line item and make sure that what we're doing focuses on that. And we have not been doing that to a large extent.
You know, I think it was surprising that Raheena Romero won by such an overwhelming margin.
Amazing.
over Steve Farley, the longtime legislator. It was obviously for a lot of reasons. One of her campaign was obviously well run, but she also had about $1.5 million pumped into the campaign from outside sources of what many people would call dark money. at the end of the campaign, which just overwhelmed, I think, the Farley effort, which was a pretty good effort. He'd been campaigning almost for a full year. But the truth of the matter is, as people have taken a look at Rahina Romero, they believe she's a nice person. She's a nice lady, a good mother and a wife, and just an all-around good person. But she is not going to be the best mayor we've ever had. I, on the other hand, believe you could be the best mayor we've ever had because of your skills matched against her skills. And I'm just not sure, as I've watched Rahina Romero on the council from Ward 1 for 12 years, that she has the leadership capability that's going to be the most effective leader of our town. And that's not saying anything against her. I'm just saying that I think she's limited with what she's showed me in 12 years and what you've showed me in about 12 months here. I think a lot of people say to you, I think you'd be a great mayor. Now you have to just come down to the reality of Rahina Romero's got a D by her name, and there's a lot more Democrats and Republicans, and you're an independent running, and you've got to overcome that. So how do you do that? How do you do that? You're the best qualified mayoral candidate we've seen in a generation, and you would be a great mayor to lead us to really becoming an even greater city than we are. But how do you get there?
I think timing is an important part of this. We are just at the 45-day mark. We have about 45 days left before final ballots are tabulated. And we are approaching this from a strategic viewpoint. We have saved our money for this period of time when the sprint starts toward the finish line. And so we just this past week started our digital presence. We're really active in that. And many people who fall into some specific categories are receiving some specific targeted messages from me. And those obviously tend to be a little younger audience and a millennial and that type of an audience and some younger folks that are voting and some people in some specific categories. We start, tomorrow morning, we start the television that we hope will kind of reach a more broad and older market. And that starts tomorrow, as I said. And then this next week, we start a massive radio campaign to tell people about me. Ballots come out on October 10th, and they have until November 2nd to turn those ballots in. And November 5th is the election day. And we have timed this from a marketing perspective to make sure that our message gets out in concert with that particular timing. And so people have complained that they haven't seen my signs up, that they haven't seen me on TV and so forth. Well, I've been in the marketing business for a long, long, long time. And we have a plan. Our plan is solid. Our plan is focused, and that's what we're doing. And people will begin to see me. And it's not that I haven't been everywhere. I've been everywhere in the last 9 months. I have gone to hundreds of events and met with thousands of people. And my message is getting out there. Now my general message will begin to get out there as well.
When do you debate Rahina Romero?
This Thursday, the 26th of September at 6 o'clock down at the YWCA on Bonita, there will be a forum moderated, orchestrated by the League of Women Voters and the Tucson Young Professionals. And it's not specifically between her and me. It's between all the candidates that are running. So the three ward candidates will also be there. But we will get some time together along with Mike Cease, who is the Green candidate, party member. And the three of us will be there to answer some questions and to share our information with people. So I encourage people to show up to that, because that will be a time when you can see the comparison between the answers of the candidates.
Well, here's, to the nitty-gritty, if you don't mind. And that is, we had a long interview with Raul Grijalva, who I believe was responsible for picking up the phone and calling unions and all kinds of special interests to pump $1.5 million into the campaign of Rahina Romero. Why would he do that for her? Well, first of all, his chief of staff is married to Rahina Romero. They have a very close relationship and a long-standing relationship. And Rahina Romero has been really by his side and he by her side for the 12 years she's been on the council. And here's the point. I believe that Rahina Romero takes a lot of advice from Raul Grijalva. Why would she not? He's a very powerful congressman. He has said, look, I support a $15 minimum wage, $15 hour minimum wage. I think she will do that as well. He supports the sanctuary movement. I think Rahina will get behind it at the end of the campaign, if not, if it passes, and it be in full-throated support of it, rather than fighting it, even after it might attempt to be implemented. And I think it's going to be a real problem for the city of Tucson. $15 an hour at this particular point would be a real death blow to a lot of businesses in this community. And I support higher wages for people. And many people are getting paid $15 an hour. Many people are not. But the other reason, of course, is you have a situation where the Sanctuary City tag or identity is going to be extremely dangerous for this community. So, I mean, if I believe under the leadership of Raheena Romero as mayor of this town, we're going to be a stock car race in which we run left and make left turns constantly and try to win by turning left and moving to the left. This move by this political party of the Democrats to the left with her leadership and her connection with the left, with Grijalva, is a liability for this community we cannot afford. We can't afford to do that. It's going to turn back the clock literally decades to a time when we never got anything done in this town. And I think we were coming out of that as voters supported more money for parks. Voters supported more money for roads. Voters supported this council. But this council's changed dramatically after this November election. You have a Ward 4 council seat that's new. You've got a Ward 2 city council seat that's up for grabs. It's probably going to stay the same. But you also have a Ward 1 council person we don't even know anything about, really, to be honest with you, and probably a mayor we don't know anything about until we find out more about you. So, I mean, this is a new ballgame.
It is, and I think your focus on what Raul Grijalva and that whole group has in store for Southern Arizona is an important dialogue that we have to have as a community. What do we want to be in 10 or 15, 30, 50 years? What type of water delivery do we want to have? What type of public safety do we want to have? What are our roads going to look like in a few years? And what is the focus? And if we focus on these things that you've mentioned, Sanctuary City and the increasing the minimum wage and doing some of these things, we barely can cover the expenses that the city of Tucson has within the budget as we are now. And we're just barely in the black the last two cycles. If we put ourselves in a position where we are spending more than we bring in and have more policies and in place that cause businesses in this town to have to shell out some more money, we are putting Tucson in a precarious position, and that's not a place I want us to be. I want us to move forward in a positive direction, not turning left, as you've indicated.
We're talking with Ed Ackerley, who is the candidate for mayor, independent candidate for mayor. This portion of the John C. Scott Show originates from the Perfection Auto Works studios. We're going to take a quick break and come back with you, Ed. Right after these messages, we'll return with a conversation with Ed Ackerley. We're talking with Ed Ackerley, independent candidate for mayor. Obviously, the uphill battle is just what we said, an uphill battle. But you've made a few steps along the way to make this elevation not as daunting as it was in the very beginning. Because when you looked at it in the beginning, you had to go, oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness.
I think the average person who might run for a mayor and have to go through the process that we went through as an independent, getting over 5,300 signatures, that in itself is a major mammoth task. I did underestimate a little bit the how tough it would be to get the $310 in-city resident donations. That turned out to be a little bit longer than we had hoped, about 3 weeks longer than we had targeted, and that's just a really tough thing to do. And then, fighting the Democratic machine is also a difficult thing to do as an independent. The resources and the infrastructure just isn't there. But we've been really successful, and we have talked to hundreds, if not thousands, of people about the future of Tucson, and we have done a great job of getting our message out to date, and we'll continue to do that over the coming weeks.
Well, as you obviously have targeted not only the digital work that you're doing into an area that is becoming extremely effective, I think, mm-hmm. in campaigns. I don't think you can ignore the digital world if you're going to be a politician anymore. But also, I think you've been, I think, everywhere, haven't you?
I don't
think you've ever turned down anybody.
If it's my schedule and I'm available, I go. And I even go into some pretty tough places. I go into some union places where I went to a couple of meetings with the unions. You know, they're obviously in the corner of the Democratic nominee, and rightfully so. But it was nice to be able to go in and share my story with some of the unions and talk with them. I've talked with police and fire, who obviously have unions and are very concerned about the future and their situation. So I've had some unique conversations with some people who are friendly and lots of people who are just are up in the air. They don't know what they want to do, and they've been perhaps a Democrat for a long time, and they're torn because The future doesn't, like you said, the race car race, they're going in the left quite a bit, and that's not what some of them really want to see happen to our city.
So. If I told you that Raheena Romero called a high-ranking member of the Democratic Party and said, we demand you help us in our general election, was critical of that individual because they were critical of her and her outside money and the win over Steve Farley of the Democratic primary, and then Raheena threatened them, in whatever way she could, would that surprise you?
There's been a lot of surprises to me personally, things that I never considered before running as a non-politician. There have been innumerable things that have come up. Even in this past week, I was told a couple of things like, you know, I just don't, my brain doesn't think like that. I wouldn't ever think to do that to somebody else, and I certainly wouldn't want it to be done to me. So, it doesn't surprise me. Politics is a strange and interesting process in and of itself. We are forging ahead as strong as we can to try and counteract some of that and see if we can break through the clutter of politics and get down to the base brass tacks, which is really... We have to do something different here. We've got to move forward. We've got to move our city forward. We can't continue to do these campaigns and policies and things that are leading us to the left. We need to move forward, and we need to move into the future, and that's what I'm focused on.
Well, I don't think that, first of all, the reason I've supported you from the very beginning of this campaign is, one, I think you have an incredible business sense, but I think you have a social conscience. I think we all have to have that. I mean, we are a neighbor's keeper.
Right.
The people that are struggling the most are our neighbors,
right.
And we ought to do what we can as a community to make their life better if we can. And we do that. We do it in many, many different ways. So I think you have to be able to have a business sense to run a city. But
absolutely.
You also have to have a social conscience because mm-hmm. you have a great many, and especially in this town, almost 25%, if not 30% of the community is under the minimum wage and in the poverty level. I mean, a third or a quarter under the poverty level of the United States? I mean, that's a challenge.
Yeah, well, I do think that one of the unique things about my campaign, which has been, I would say it was brilliant, especially on November 6th when I'm, being very happy. I will say I was a brilliant man, and I was very had the vision of the future in sight. Asking people to jump in and help solve problems. That's what the key to this has been. People who have been sitting on the sidelines and have not been doing much with their city government, I'm asking them to jump in and help me solve these problems and these basic needs of the city of Tucson, whether you're a Republican, an independent, a Democrat, or whether you're no party affiliation. Jump in and help solve the problems. Let's not all complain about all the terrible things. Let's get together and solve these problems.
Well, the Ed Akerda campaign for mayor is going to be a lot more visible. You got TV starting tomorrow. The signs are up on corners in my neighborhood and neighborhoods all across the valley. So you remind people that there is a contest for mayor.
We got a lot more going up, too. So it's going to we're going to be all over town.
Right. Well, Ed Akerda, thanks for being on the show with us today.
Thank you,
John. We really appreciate it. I wish you well.
Okay.
I ask people to support you. I think we'll be a much better city if you are mayor of Tucson. I want to thank the people at Perfection Auto Works and Mike Emery, who supports our show. This portion of the John C. Scott Talk Show originates from the Perfection Auto Works studios. And when we talk about being an honest mechanic and taking care of your car the way you'd want it to be taken care of, that's what the people at Perfection Auto Works do. This is a great company, and we're very proud to be affiliated with it. This is KVOI The Voice, trusted local news and talk. This has been the John C. Scott Show. This is Talk Radio for Southern Arizona. I'm so thankful and glad you could join us this afternoon. Be back 2 to 4 next Saturday for another Political Forum from KVOI and the John C. Scott Show.